I want to start today with the new FAA administrator, Randy Babbitt. Randy Babbitt grew up loving aviation. He started in his teens when he learned to fly. He served as a line boy. He flew ferry fights. Ultimately, he got his airline job with Eastern Airlines, and he rose through the ranks and ultimately became the president of the Airline Pilots Association. He's been recognized not just for his negotiation skills, but by his commitment to making aviation better in the United States. In 1993, Randy served on the Presidential Commission, which recommended what ultimately became the General Aviation Revitalization Act of 1994. In 2000, Randy was appointed by President Clinton and confirmed by the United States Senate to serve on the FAA's Management Advisory Council. And under the Bush administration, Secretary Peters appointed Randy to a five-person panel that oversaw airline safety. In June of this year, Randy was confirmed as the 16th administrator of the FAA. Please join me in welcoming a tremendous aviation person through and through, Randall J. Babbitt, the 16th administrator of the FAA.
Well, thank you very much, Ed, for that kind introduction. I am truly honored to be here, especially with such a great, august group of speakers that you've assembled. And it's always great to be able to get up and chat with folks about aviation. I want to assure you that even in aviation, the adage that there's only 6 degrees of separation is quite true. I'm going to ask you to set your watch back a little bit. Let's go back to 1963. I was 17 years old. I had a private pilot's license, and I had my first big job in aviation. I was in aviation and employed. I was a line boy. And one of the big highlights of that first summer that I worked in aviation, I was working at a little airport south of here, Opa-locka, and we had a gentleman by the name of Arnold Palmer was going to bring his aero commander in there. We were all excited. So I got to fuel Arnold Palmer's airplane. I always remember Mr. Palmer shook hands with both of us as he got off the airplane. It was really a highlight. If my memory serves, the IN number was 20 Alpha Papa, and the airplane was blue. So if you don't think those things make an indelible mark for you, they do. I just got back from flying. I've been to Osaka and Beijing over the last few weeks. When I got back, I threw in a trip to Las Vegas over the weekend before coming here. So I've had about 44 hours in airplanes in the last 9 days. But that's given me a lot of time to think about a few things. Think about the NBAA and what you do. And thinking about what I might say to you today about aviation and some of the issues that are out there. And I'd like to make two pitches, if I could. One dealing with SMS, safety management systems, and the other for professionalism. And that's been a subject that's been in front of us for a little bit. But let me start the discussion on SMS. And I know you're going to think I'm wandering off here, but I want to focus this on anesthesia. Over the years, anesthesia has become sort of the reputation for or the stuff of medical misdeeds, if you would. What was created to, you know, make a patient sleep or at least render them oblivious to pain during a surgery instead became the subject of pretty intense scrutiny. And that scrutiny was over mistakes that were being made, often fatal mistakes. There was a time when ether was used in anesthesia. And I know why you're saying, thank God I wasn't around for that. Let me be the one to tell you, they were using ether as little as 25 years ago. So it has been here. Everyone knows, too, that ether is about a half a spark away from a fire. And unlike or not unlike a cockpit, fire in the operating room is not a good thing. But this trend with anesthesiologists was going in the wrong direction. As mistakes were made, more and more people were losing their lives on the operating table. More and more families took their cases to court. Settlements were reached, but interestingly, the files were sealed. So what was happening? Well, no one knew. And if you found yourself, no matter where you were in the process, if you were in the chain of causation, you were joining in a grim game of hot potato, the kind of tag, you're it, situation that gets people even more defensive. The problem was clear. The solution was evasive. If an anesthesiologist said, this has happened, this is what happened when I did X, they were simply opening themselves up for the potential for a medical malpractice lawsuit. And so, with the settlements being sealed, no one was talking. And because these secrets were kept by the court, they stayed sealed. And it's hard to believe, but even 25 years ago, very little was ever actually known about the people who died on the operating table or were injured under the effects of anesthesia. Even harder to believe, this is absolutely amazing, there wasn't a single database of medical records to shed any light on these catastrophes. So finally, a group of anesthesiologists formed the Anesthesia Patient Safety Foundation. And it was a standalone organization, not well received. Most people thought it was something to promote medical supplies or, you know, another defense mechanism put up by doctors. But in fact, and fortunately, one hospital and an insurance company decided to go along. Step one was to create a database and fill it. And while they were allowed to redact privacy data, they poured through case after case, and they discovered the gold. In one string of cases, this was interesting, there was a filter that was used in the filtration of gases for the patient. And the filter would dry out over the weekend, so that on Monday mornings it was ineffective, and they noticed the majority of these deaths were occurring on Mondays. By having the data, they were able to string the causation together and eliminate the problem. They had other issues coming up. In some cases, they found that the doctors were simply applying the wrong anesthesia or putting it in the wrong places. The patient would die. But before, they had no idea. Now they did. New procedures were developed. New equipment was developed, sometimes expensive equipment. But the mistakes grew further and further apart. Premiums dropped for their insurance. But more importantly, the number of fatalities occurring in the operating room dropped dramatically. The information was always there. It's just that the people wouldn't share it for one reason or another. A lot of them were afraid for punitive action. Others just thought it was best to keep silent. But when someone finally got the bright idea that there was gold to be had on the other side of the curtain, that's when the change came about. Someone finally got the courage to engage their colleagues, invest the money, take a good look at self-examination, and the result was lives saved. There's a line in the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner that says, water, water, everywhere, not a drop to drink. Well, that's us in aviation. There's data all over the place, but in too many instances, we can't get to it. And in order to ratchet up to the next level of safety, a next higher level of safety, safety management systems are going to be our only option. When you have as few accidents as we do today, it's difficult to spot a trend on a chart that only has three data points on it. SMS is the solution. SMS doesn't wait for accidents. Now, forensics has brought us, in fact, to the place where we're exceedingly safe. We've nearly eliminated all of the common causes of aviation accidents. But safety management systems will allow us to identify the precursors. That's the data. That's the gold. That's where we need to begin digging. It's only when people know and have immunity that they can raise their hand and say to someone, hey, I'm seeing a problem here. This is dangerous. We need to fix this. That's when we're going to rise to the next level of safety. If you ever have a system where people who are going to be punished for revealing a safety flaw in your system, all you're going to do is encourage silence. When you sweep things under a rug like that, accidents will happen, equipment will be lost, and people will die. So we must avoid the temptation to cut corners because the economy is tight. And I know as well as anybody in this room, as well as anybody in this hall, we are in a very tough economy, one of the worst we've seen since the 30s. But nevertheless, every flight department in here is feeling that pinch. But the stock market should never have a bearing on whether or not people are allowed to speak up, and it should never have a bearing on what we do about safety. And we can never get to a place where people are going to take shortcuts and be saying things, well, you know, I know everything on this checklist. We're in a hurry. I'm just not going to read it. We can never get there. If you skip a step here and there, bad things will happen. And when they do, don't be surprised. I don't want you to think that I'm here to criticize. I'm not. My words are simply a reminder that we must step up. When it comes to safety, status quo is never enough. Since 2002, corporate aviation has averaged a fatal accident only one in every 3.5 million hours. That's an incredible safety record, and you're to be applauded for that. Commercial aviation is in the same basket with you. We went 29 months without a fatal commercial aviation accident. We've now been 9 months, and there's only been one in that period of 38 months, one accident. We operate 70,000 flights a day. We carry 800 million people a year accident-free, and that's a remarkable record. But the fact that we have one accident, that's one too many. Those accident statistics I just gave you are but a watermark, and we all have to push for safety, push the watermark higher. Now, safety records like that start with professionals, just like the ones that are in this room. So I'm going to ask you to do a little mental check ride with me. And this applies to the pilot, the crew, and the flight departments. Are you always reporting for duty rested and prepared? Are you continuously refreshing your knowledge? Are you rigorously following checklists and procedures that are prescribed for you? Do you discipline yourself to stay at least 10 miles ahead of the airplane at all times? Do you try to do that? Do you use quiet moments that happen in a cockpit and make productive use of that time? You can do things like refreshing the briefing, rechecking the FMS, going over the flight plan again, just to be sure. Do you thoroughly brief and communicate with everybody, ATC, and your crew members? Do you fly with precision? Even more importantly, do you fly with precision when you're by yourself? Pretty easy when somebody else is watching, but do you discipline yourself to do that? Do you always push for a higher standard of professional flying? And in that context, you should read the word professional and discipline to be one and the same word. And here's another thought. What do you expect from the other pilots? When the moment strikes, are you careful not to let a moment for teaching or mentoring pass by? Easy to do, sometimes hard to give somebody a correction, but it's the right thing to do. Do you honestly provide feedback to your flying partners? And do you honestly seek feedback from your partners about your performance? Do you strive to look professional? Well, what I'm suggesting is that we all need to be running through a checklist like this every day. The fact is, we can't regulate professionalism. That's one thing I have no access to. I can't make anyone a mentor. And we all know that some of the best lessons that we've ever learned in aviation came from someone who was there before us. I would submit that there's not a person in this room doesn't have something really notable in their life that they always remember about aviation, and they probably remember who told it to them. Well, when you think about catastrophes like Tenerife, ValueJet, or even the accident up in Buffalo, there were a lot of red flags there. Someone didn't react appropriately. And in any of these cases, professionalism and mentoring probably would have made a difference. It does add up. So that's why I continue to stress the need for mentoring among professionals. If I close my eyes, I can still remember my instructor glaring at me for something I had done wrong, but then he was always patient and then would teach me the right way to do it. Aviation is a tough enough skill to come by as it is, but aviation is no place to learn it in the school of hard knocks. We need strong professionals, the kind that the NBAA is known for, to step forward and become those mentors. If you're already doing it, good, that's terrific. But if you're not, recognize that you probably have some very valuable lessons locked away that you could really help someone someday do the right thing at the right time when no one's watching. So in closing, it's clear that SMS will help us connect the dots with the data. And professionalism and mentoring will help us put it all to good use. In bringing all of this full circle, the story about the anesthesiologist, the discussion of SMS, the need for professionalism, all have a common thread, and that common thread is you. As safe as we are, we still need to be safer yet. We have distance to go. We can go to a higher level of safety. We all need to step up, each one of us, individually and collectively, need to accept the responsibility for making it happen. Thank you.